The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Crossfield zinger from Van Dijk. Salah. Cucurella is the defender. And Henderson goal! Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Here is Oxlade-Chamberlain, the substitute. Oh, what a ball. Brilliant. What a goal for Liverpool. That is absolutely served on a plate by Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. Sadio Mane just couldn't miss. Enoch Mwepu, hello. Oh, that's a fine goal. And he's placed it absolutely perfectly as the Zambian. Bypasses Trossard and Lallana and Trossard. And they've opened Liverpool up again. And they've got themselves an equaliser.
Right, so I suppose the positive is Liverpool are still unbeaten, but without a doubt 2 points dropped as Brighton came back from two down, and the game came at a cost as well. Naby Keita, of course, the latest on the midfield injury list. Our extra players needed in January. That and the Champions League tie with Atletico to discuss. We've got Kiva O'Neill and James Pearce. Kiva, you were at the game, you watched it, you've written about it. Day off for this Liverpool side. Let's just start with a little positive. The goals from Jordan Henderson and Sadio. The perfect platform, really.
Yeah, the first goal in particular was just so well worked, wasn't it? I think it was Henderson had a little bit of a back heel in the build-up to it. It was, you know, a really good goal, really good finish from the captain, who, you know, was getting himself among the goals this season, which is good to see. And you always love a Jordan Henderson celebration, and he always gives us all for that. So that was nice. A nice sort of start to the game. About 4 minutes in, you thought, yeah, this is Liverpool. They're just going to be relentless. And he was for that time. I mean, there was a bit of a warning sign maybe inside the first 10 minutes. Brighton had like had a couple of good chances, got broken to Liverpool's box, and you knew what they could do, and maybe that'll come to hurt Liverpool later on, which it obviously did. Oxlade-Chamberlain comes on for Naby Keita and puts in that gorgeous cross for Sadio Mane. And then, yeah, I think Klopp even said, I think Mane's second goal is his favourite ever, which was obviously the disallowed goal, just for the pressure that, you know, he and Salah and the team put on Robert Sanchez in the Brighton goal. You know, a lot of positives to take from that, but then it just, what can you do about Mwepu's goal, really? You know, Alisson was sort of caught out. I think the sun was actually shining at that point, but it went so quickly, the sun, that I was like, was the sun shining or not? But yeah, just a bizarre goal, a really good one to see and witness, actually. It was just like, where the hell did that come from? And then obviously we know what happens in the second half, and Liverpool just lacked in something, and I couldn't quite figure out what it was, whether it was energy or they just dropped a little bit of belief. The body languages just started dropping off, you know, all over the pitch. You could just see the heads were dropping a bit, and, you know, Klopp and his staff were shouting from the side of the pitch. You know, Henderson was bickering with Oxlade-Chamberlain at one point, and then Van Dijk towards the end of the game. It wasn't the Liverpool that we watched last week by any stretch. There was instances of that Liverpool, but just not enough. And yeah, I think they've done well to avoid defeat.
It all got really frustrating. Let's face it, 2-0 up, James, and we're all thinking it's going to be 3 minimum, because they've been scoring at least 3, haven't they, in games. Yeah. Third goal was nearly there. And in hindsight, you look back and you think, well, if they had got the third, surely that would have been it. But as Kiva mentioned there, it's so hard to put your finger on why it all turned so dramatically.
Yeah, I think the first thing you've got to say is Brighton are a really good team. It wasn't like Liverpool lost their way against a team that had been struggling. I think, you know, Graham Potter has done an unbelievably good job there, and they're really pleasing on the eye. And I just don't think they were ever going to be the kind of team that was just going to go away. Sometimes a team will come to Anfield, be in that situation 2-0 down after 25 minutes, and almost go into damage limitation mode where they're thinking, oh God, this could be 5 or 6. But I just think Brighton have got such a belief in what they do. They're made of really stern stuff. So I wasn't surprised that they didn't go quietly. I think the massively disappointing for me was the fact that Liverpool eased off, where they were in that position to really make a statement, and just loads of sloppy errors crept in. I think it was strange because I was watching it in a bar in Alicante, actually, full of Liverpool fans, and I thought Liverpool looked a bit leggy. I don't know why, because obviously most of them had midweek off. You know, there was no real reason, but they just seemed to be lacking that spark. And you know, people point fingers at the defence of how easily Brighton got in behind them. But I must admit, I agree with what Klopp said, was that it was more a collective issue. Well, I think he talked about them not covering the half spaces well enough, which, you know, essentially where it was too easy for Brighton in the middle of the park. They were allowed time and space on the ball, and when you give them that, they can hurt you. So it was interesting what Klopp said. You know, very rarely is he so critical in terms of when he said about in the second half he didn't like the body language of some of his players. I think his quote was like, it was like, oh my God, this is really tough, and it was, and Liverpool just really struggled to respond to that. You know, you can point to the two disallowed goals, you know, the Sadio Mane handball and obviously the Salah offside one, but there's no way Liverpool deserved more than a point from that game. They could even have lost it. You know, I thought they had lost it when Trossard tucked that one away late on. So, you know, the only real positive to come from it was the fact they didn't lose the game.
You both referred to what we expected to be some momentum from the Manchester United win. Isn't football mad, Keevy? You know, you do that one weekend at Old Trafford, one of the historic performances and wins, and then this happens a week later. And as James mentioned there, I mean, you know, most of these players not even involved midweek.
I think that's why fans walked out the ground feeling like this felt like a defeat, because they've just watched the team absolutely smash Manchester United to pieces in their own back garden. And then they've come and produced that kind of performance, which had moments and glimpses of that team, but just wasn't all there and all together as it was on Sunday. So I think that's where, you know, the disappointment really lies, because they've just produced that phenomenal performance, season-defining. You know, we'll be talking about that in many, many years to come. But then now we're here, you just drew 2-2 at Brighton, and it does just feel like a bit of a drop in momentum after, you know, that game. You thought that Liverpool, something had clicked. Obviously, you know, you see United beat Spurs 3-0, and that sort of gave them the bit of drive now, maybe. So football is a funny game. It can work in different ways. But yeah, I agree what James said about Brighton just being a really good football team. They probably, I think Klopp said it after, like, they're almost like underrated by people. Like, you know, they're high up in the league. They've had a really good start. They're a very good football team. Liverpool struggled to break through them, but I think Liverpool struggled on the wings. You know, Klopp changed the formation. It was about 71 minutes in. He shouted Oxlade-Chamberlain over and just gave him instructions. I think Liverpool had a free kick, and then Oxlade-Chamberlain ran over to Firmino and started saying, you know, where they were going to play, and he moved Oxlade-Chamberlain to the left. I think Mane moved across, and it was a 4-4-2, he said after the game, which I didn't really notice in the madness of it all. But, you know, that's a madness for Jurgen Klopp to go, we're really struggling here with the width. I think Cucurella was immense down the left for Brighton. You know, for him to be like, we need to put more back to deal with this, because Liverpool were under it. I was fully convinced Brighton were going to score. They obviously did. And then, you know, it was offside, luckily for Liverpool. So a lot of people come out knowing Liverpool should have won the game, because you expect Liverpool to win the game on the back of beating Man United 5-0. But at the same time, you know, Brighton could have easily rolled Liverpool over there and just looked like they were going to. Adam Lallana having the game of his Brighton career, perhaps.
Him, Trossard.
He was so, so good. The first Cruyff turn, I think, sort of got a bit of a smile from everyone.
Imagine the scenario. A much-loved and inspirational leader has announced his intention to take a career break, and you need to find someone just as tactically astute and charismatic, but perhaps without the glasses and the teeth. Well, when you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. And that's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. And LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive. Hiring is simple when you have that many quality candidates. So simple, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. And LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They've even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even quicker. So post your job for free at linkedin.com/walk. That's linkedin.com/walk. WLK to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Let's talk midfield then. You know, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, we'll start with him. Obviously, there's a bit of a midfield dilemma going on now. Last season, it was a defensive crisis. Now we're looking at the midfield and we're all sort of scratching our head, James, and thinking, is there enough there for the long term? I mean, you start the season, you've got all these options, Fabinho, you know, Thiago, Jordan, Keita. They all seem to be dropping like pins quite quickly.
Yeah, and it certainly is a major concern now, isn't it? I think you rewind probably to pre-season and it was a big talking point probably until we realised that Harvey Elliott was being reinvented as a centre midfielder, and then you kind of went, well, actually, do you know what? That kind of changes things, especially with how well Harvey Elliott started the season. And you think, well, that's a fresh option. So maybe Liverpool can get by without a Wijnaldum replacement. But I think it was always a nagging concern because it wasn't just the skill set of Gini Wijnaldum. It was the fact he was incredibly durable. No, he just never missed a game of football, did he? He was always available for the manager, which, you know, in all the different attributes you can list about a footballer, that is the biggest one. Like, you know, someone who's just always there and always ready. And also the versatility that Wijnaldum had, where he was, you know, he was just at home playing, you know, as a number eight, as he was a number six, and a very selfless individual. So, you know, a lot of misfortune has now put Liverpool in a position now where, you know, he is down almost to the bare bones, isn't he? With especially, obviously, Milner picked up that hamstring injury at Old Trafford. Now, obviously, you know, Keita, thankfully, having been on the receiving end of that horrendous challenge from Pogba, gets back quick, but then, you know, does his hamstring on the weekend. So you'd imagine we're probably looking at the same midfield that finished, you know, obviously Oxlade came on at the weekend, when you're probably looking at him, Henderson and Curtis Jones. You know, the only kind of ray of light at the moment in terms of reinforcements is Thiago isn't far away. Klopp said on Friday that he'd been back in full training on Thursday. But I think after a fair amount of time out, they're being extra cautious there. And I know Klopp said he won't be fully up to speed until after the international break. But you just wonder whether he will have to, you know, get some minutes this week, because there isn't too much left in the cupboard midfield-wise.
It's amazing, isn't it? Kiva, you've written on this. You've had a deep look into it. Could you have actually predicted, or is this a little bit harsh to say? I mean, you'd have never known what was going to happen with Harvey Elliott, but you know Thiago's got a history of injuries. You know Naby's been erratic in the years that he's been at Liverpool. Henderson's had his injury problems. So there are midfielders there that you might have said pre-season, you know, before the campaign. Is it a concern, or is it easy to say that now in hindsight?
Yeah, it probably is easier to say it in hindsight. I think we couldn't have predicted what happened to the defence last season, even for Joel Matip and Joe Gomez's injuries over the seasons. But I think with the midfield, you know, some of these players are a little bit more injury prone, but there's that many of them that you thought, oh, Liverpool will be okay if they don't, you know, replace Wijnaldum. So the worry sort of, I think, got put to the back of a lot of people's minds, and especially when Harvey Elliott was released onto, you know, unleashed onto Premier League football. You know, he looks so, so good. And I think he would be playing pretty much every game. You know, he played so much for Blackburn when he was on loan there. So that would have been, I think he'd nailed down that position. And then obviously his injury was so unfortunate that, you know, that kind of, he was the Wijnaldum replacement almost to the squad. And then now, you know, it's just, you're worried. I think, you know, Fabinho's out. Klopp said that was a complicated knee injury. They don't quite know what's going on yet. I think we'll probably find out
this week. That's the biggest one, isn't it, in all of this?
Yeah, definitely. Fabinho's Liverpool's most important midfielder by a long stretch, I think. You know, Jordan Henderson's the captain. We know what he does. And he's going to be vital in the weeks to come, as is Curtis Jones, who's, you know, didn't start the season, had a few issues, and, you know, now has stepped up. Didn't think he had his best game on Saturday, but did any of them really? So yeah, Fabinho's the one. I think Liverpool were massively missing. There were so many moments when Brighton cut through Liverpool, and I was just thinking Fabinho would have been there to mop that up and just get Liverpool going forward again. So I think he does feel like the big one. Thiago needs to come back pretty soon. You know, like James said, if he can get some minutes from off the bench against Atletico, and then, you know, you feel like you need him against West Ham. But will he be up to speed enough to play against them? They're in such good form at the minute. Obviously won again on the road on Sunday. So it's becoming a bit of a problem for Klopp. I feel like it probably always was going to be going into the season if injuries were to kick up as they have. Harvey Elliott obviously being the main one. And then, yeah, just niggling ones. I think if Liverpool had all of those midfielders to pick from, then they wouldn't have a problem. But, you know, they sort of seem to be dropping like flies and then coming back, and then one of them will go, and it just kind of like in that frustrating moment. You kind of wish maybe Keita would have almost been rested, even though, you know, he was okay to play, because then he would have avoided this. And, you know, he's a player who's had a difficult sort of time at Liverpool, but I think he's been an important player this season. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain has definitely got minutes in him now, which is a good thing for Liverpool. And I think maybe we could see, you know, a better performance from him against Atletico. We'll have to. And then, you know, he likes playing against West Ham, I think. He scored some goals against them in the past, hasn't he? So, yeah, I think it's about those on the periphery now stepping up.
I mean, Ox started well, James, didn't he? And, you know, for him, so important to get first-team football. He's been desperate to sort of get back in there, but, of course, stopped by the quality that's been ahead of him. Brilliant cross, of course, for the goal, but he waned, didn't he, in the game against Brighton? I don't know what it was. In the second half, he didn't look like the player in the first half that started at such a good pace and a tempo.
Yeah, I mean, he was probably one of the few. He probably, you know, fatigue maybe was a real reason, having featured against Preston in midweek. Having, oh, let's not forget, you know, prior to that, he hadn't played a huge amount of football. He spent most of this opening few months of the season warming the bench. So for him, he's got to look upon this week as a fantastic opportunity. You know, that's been a feature, hasn't it, of the last few seasons, that when there has been adversity that Klopp has had to face, that someone has emerged from the fringes and done a fantastic job. You know, we saw that last season with, you know, probably Nat Phillips was the absolute epitome of that, someone who, you know, wouldn't have expected to have been given those opportunities, and then bang, you know, he's in there starting almost week in, week out. And it feels like it's a really key period for Oxlade-Chamberlain, because he has had a tough time. Again, you know, very stop-start really since he came back from that serious injury. Hasn't really been able to get back to the heights that he was at prior to that. You know, in and out of the team, you know, in that kind of vicious circle where you probably need to be playing more regularly to be able to get back to your best. But then if you're not justifying getting picked every week, then you're not going to get that regular football. And let's not forget, you know, a lot of talk about contracts at the moment, in particular around Mo Salah. Well, you know, Oxlade-Chamberlain's also well into the last 2 years of his deal as well. And so, you know, he's got a lot to prove this season in terms of saying, well, you know, I should be part of the future going forward. And the talent's there. I mean, that was an unbelievable delivery for Mane. And you just want to see that more from him. I think sometimes I get the feeling of Oxlade-Chamberlain, he's a bit hard on himself. And when I watch him sometimes in games, when I think sometimes he seems to struggle to shake off mistakes, as if, you know, sometimes he seems to beat himself up a little bit in terms of not being able to say, just to park what just happened and move on. And sometimes he then tries too hard and then more mistakes happen and then the head drops a little bit. And, you know, because the opportunities will definitely be there for him. You know, what a week it is with, you know, I think absolutely mouthwatering, isn't it? The prospect of Atletico coming to Anfield on Wednesday night after how dramatic and eventful and spiky the game was over there a few weeks ago. And then, as Kiva said before, West Ham away is up there with, you know, the trickiest trips you can have in the Premier League at the moment with the form there in under David Moyes. So, yeah, massive, massive opportunity for Oxlade-Chamberlain. And let's hope he grasps it.
Yeah, because that at his best, how can you not be a fan of him? So, you know, fingers crossed he finds that form. Liverpool brought on Jota, but brought him on late in the game, I thought, Kiva. I don't think it really gave him enough time to maybe influence things.
You could almost feel the crowd wanting a change. You know, you could sense Liverpool needed someone to come on. Obviously, I think with Klopp having to make that early change, he sort of waited when he'd brought on Oxlade-Chamberlain, and I think was it the 19th minute or something. So I feel like sometimes with Klopp, he'll either just make the change or he will really leave it. And he sort of like, you're almost like he's testing this team to find something before he replaces one of them. Jota didn't really have an impact when he come on. I think same said for Minamino. He had like the first 30 seconds he was on, I think there was like a really good moment when he sort of broke through, and then Mike Dean somehow called it back for a free kick, which just stopped Liverpool's momentum. It was like, that was the moment. I think it was quite late on when you just knew, yeah, this isn't going to happen for Liverpool today. And I think that's probably the worrying thing from this, is that the same feeling was sort of there at Brentford, that yeah, Liverpool are lucky and almost escaped, because both of those games they could have lost and would have done in, you know, years before Klopp was here. They're the games Liverpool end up losing late on. But I just think that feeling of not winning late, you know, where are the late winners? the team need to dig in and start producing them again, because obviously we know that's what title winning teams do. They wait till late and then they score. Obviously Chelsea, I think, had a bit of a difficult game at Newcastle, didn't they? But then they pulled it out the bag. With Man City losing as well at home to Crystal Palace, you kind of felt like this was a good opportunity for Liverpool to, you know, steal a little march on them as well, because you do feel like, you know, it's Chelsea and Man City who are paving the way, and Liverpool were alongside them there. And I do think, you know, it is a missed opportunity, but it's definitely just on to the next one now, isn't it? Atletico Madrid, try and qualify for, obviously, the knockout stages of the Champions League. And then it's West Ham, which, as James said, you know, a massive test for them, but a win there. And then I think we're heading into another international break. Like, how many international breaks are there? I can't cope.
It's got to be the last one, hasn't it? It's the Red Agenda, brought to you by The Athletic. James Pearce, Keith O'Neill, myself, Steve Hother. So let's go to Atletico Madrid. Perfect introduction to that game. And of course, it evokes memories of the last game being played in Britain before the COVID shutdown. And I was interested to sort of read that, you know, a few things that have been said by some of Jurgen's coaching staff about how they sort of knew, and they were a little bit wary on the day, that this is a bit odd that this game was actually taking place, James, at the time.
Yeah, I think there was a real strange feeling around that whole occasion, wasn't there? I think, you know, there was some doubt whether it would go ahead, and then, you know, when you look back now, it just seems absolutely ludicrous that game was played. When you think that at the time Madrid was pretty much the epicenter of positive COVID tests in Europe, and the idea that you'd throw open the doors and welcome in 3,000 Atletico Madrid fans at that time was absolutely crazy. I know Liverpool have always said, well, look, you know, they can. It wasn't their call. It wasn't Liverpool's decision for the game to go ahead. It was UEFA. It was governments. It was way above, you know, Liverpool's decision. But yeah, I remember hearing Klopp talking about, you know, after the game, and obviously, you know, he said it was just, you know, like a, for him it was a strange feeling that the disappointment of going out was kind of quickly tempered by the fact that there's actually something much bigger going on here, because life as we know it is just about to ground to a halt. And I think it did, didn't it? I think the following day was it when, I think it was Mikel Arteta testing positive, wasn't it, for COVID, that kind of then led to the Premier League being halted. So yeah, it was just a really strange occasion. And yeah, it was
a game Liverpool should have won. Adrian was in goal. Yeah, I mean, it was odd. It was,
yeah, I think because of what subsequently happened, it almost felt like going out the Champions League then didn't really hurt as much as it probably would have done without everything that was going on in the background, because, you know, the reality was that the competition was then held up, and, you know, it didn't feel the same until the fans came back. But yeah, that was bizarrely, that was actually a night when Liverpool played really well. You know, they should have won that tie. It was you know, Adrian, wasn't it, who made, I think, two glaring mistakes for the goals, and it was classic Atletico, really, in terms of just somehow clinging in there when they look beaten, and then finding a way. And yeah, it's just set up for an absolutely fantastic night on Wednesday, with, I think, anyone who sat through the first game over there a few weeks ago, you were, as soon as it finished, it was like, wow, you know, we've got that again in only a couple of weeks' time. And I think the fact that it is such a quick turnaround, they face each other again, just makes it even better, because I think, you know, you had the needle on the touchline, didn't you, with, you know, Simeone darting off straight down the tunnel and ignoring the handshake from Klopp, and Klopp kind of sarcastically waving in his direction. And, you know, I know the two managers defused that afterwards and insisted there were no issues. But yeah, it was very spiky, wasn't it? Even on the pitch, you know, the way that Atletico are, that, you know, they obviously felt massively aggrieved by some of the big decisions on the night. You know, that then translated into them doing everything they possibly could to try and influence the referee. We saw them, you know, surrounding the referee, haranguing him, demanding cards. So yeah, it was, you know, it was a proper contest over there that Liverpool had to fight incredibly hard to win in the end, having, you know, been absolutely cruising early on. And I don't expect Wednesday night to be any different.
It's just great theatre, isn't it? I mean, you can't take your eyes off it. If we went back to that pre-COVID one, of course, they didn't shake hands, they bumped elbows. And then, of course, you go to the one a couple of weeks ago, they don't shake hands and all eyes are... So you know, Kiva, that the press are going to be absolutely scrutinising, do these two shake hands before the game? It's almost like the start of the show, this, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. That's the thing everyone's going to be looking out for, isn't it? And the pre-match press conferences, because that's where this sort of started, didn't it, ahead of the first game. But what I did sort of just want to go back to is, you know, that Atletico Madrid game, well, you know, COVID had taken hold at that point. The fact that that game was allowed to go through and happen and it wasn't stopped by anyone, you know, was horrific when we look back. You know, I think there was a report recently which said, you know, people on Merseyside, they'd link so many deaths back to that game. I was at that game and, you know, like, people have lost their lives because of that, because it was allowed to go ahead. And I don't know, is anyone going to get called up for this? Like, who, you know, just feels like that sort of lost now. And yeah, really, really sad. There'll be people who know, you know, have family members and friends that they know that went to that game and then, you know, died shortly after of COVID. And you know, that's really sad, isn't it? We should be talking about that this week, definitely, ahead of the game, because it's something that, you know, we have all sort of been swept up in COVID for the past 18 months, so well over that now. And, you know, that was sort of the start for all of us because we didn't really know what it was. And, you know, looking back now, how that was allowed to go ahead was just, quite frankly, yeah, horrific. Right.
I mean, there's
really
such a serious side to all that, isn't there? An awful, as you say, it's affected so many families. What about this game this time round? Obviously, the game in Madrid had everything. James expects a similar sort of occasion this time around. Liverpool are very close to actually qualifying for the knockouts, Kiva.
Yeah, you think Atletico are going to bring what they've got. They want revenge. They're a team that just always look like they want revenge. I think when you've got someone like Luis Suarez on your side, you're going to tend to look like that. I think they got a good win at the weekend in La Liga.
Suarez
sure.
going to play, presumably because Griezmann's suspended?
Yeah, you'd imagine they'd want to unleash him back on the Anfield crowd. But obviously, you know, Liverpool fans will be quick to remind him that the last time he played at Anfield was obviously that famous Barcelona game, 4-0. So maybe, you know, he'll be looking to sort of repair that in his own head, I guess. You know, he's always got a goal in him. Obviously, he scored against Liverpool in the first leg of that semi-final, didn't he? And he really, really enjoyed that one, as we know. So, yeah, he'll be definitely up for this one, as will Atletico. And, you know, they need to win this, you know, as much as anything. The Champions League's always been something that's evaded them. You know, they got to a couple of finals under Simeone. But it feels like the one trophy, obviously, the reigning La Liga champions, they've won that a couple of times under him, but it just does feel like if they were to clinch the Champions League at some point under Simeone, like, he could just retire. He would no longer need to be a manager. There'd be like 100 statues of him in Madrid, wouldn't there? So yeah, they'll be more than up for this one. And you do kind of love that about them. And you, like, when they're not playing against your team, you can kind of admire the ugliness and the spirit of them, because yeah, and they are actually a really good football team as well. I don't think they've probably surprised people that they're not just sort of that low block sort of side. You know, they can play well on the counter, they play good football. Liverpool looked like they were in control of that game, and then it all just sort of turned, didn't it? And I think that was much to do with the fans in the one that as well.
It's sort of a love to hate them, isn't it? A bit like with Suarez, although you sort of love to hate to love him. And I don't think, James, he's going to care about sort of mending bridges with the Liverpool fans, sort of thing. I think as a true warrior would go, he's coming to Anfield to make his mark, isn't he?
Oh yeah. I think you only had to see that, you know, going back to that two-legged tie against Barcelona. I think, you know, with some player, you look at Adam Lallana on the weekend, and yeah, you know, someone coming back to their old club, and even when Brighton scored, he was, you know, very, very respectful. You could tell for him it was a massive deal to be coming back and to be treated well and to show his appreciation for that. But like, yeah, Suarez lives in a different world, doesn't he? There's no bridges with Luis Suarez. You know, everyone, if you don't wear the same coloured shirt as him, you're his enemy, aren't you? And that doesn't change regardless of, you know, I'm sure deep down he still has a close affinity with Liverpool, and I don't doubt he loved his time at the club, but that won't count for anything on Wednesday night. I mean, you think back to that Barcelona two-legged tie, and he was an absolute disgrace, wasn't he, in terms of doing his best to get play acting, trying to get people sent off. I thought even in the first game over there 2 weeks ago, I don't know whether it was clear on the TV because a lot of it happened off the ball, but I saw him, he clattered Van Dijk two or three times after coming on. And, you know, he didn't really ever look like influencing the game in a positive way for Atletico on that particular occasion. But yeah, he will definitely be in the thick of it. There's no doubt that he will be someone we'll be talking about come late Wednesday night. Just hopefully not not because he's positively influenced the outcome of the result. But yeah, obviously, as you said, Steve, with no Griezmann, they're going to turn to him. I think, you know, they beat Betis 3-0. I think it was yesterday, and he was subbed off with about 20, 25 minutes to go, I'm sure, to keep him fresh and ready for Wednesday night. So he commands respect because he is such a ridiculously gifted player, isn't he? It just all adds to the box office of the occasion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely love watching him. Let's do a final word on how you stop him then. And clearly Klopp's been rotating his centre-halves, and Konate's had a couple of games. I think maybe that, you know, the game against Brighton, it wasn't quite as polished, but he's young, isn't he? Still learning to play alongside him. And he's obviously trying to manage Matip's minutes on the pitch, Kiva.
Yeah, I thought, you know, Konate's performance wasn't bad at all. I do feel like the game was almost sort of lost in midfield on the sort of flanks a little bit. Konate, you know, impressed again. Had Liverpool not conceded two goals, then we would have been talking about him in a different way. I thought he was absolutely dominant at Old Trafford. And, you know, imagine coming to Liverpool, you're desperate to play, I think, because he's only 22 or something, and Klopp just dropping you into the Man United game and him having that performance. I feel like he's up to speed now, and, you know, I think we're likely to see a lot more of him. Klopp tends to do this, doesn't he, with his new signings. It takes them a little bit of time to sort of, you know, get them on the wavelength a little bit. And obviously we know Liverpool hold that high line. I think getting him used to that is important before he sort of, you know, puts him in. I think he's got a natural sort of chemistry and understanding with Virgil van Dijk, which is good to see. But as you mentioned, I do feel like it's managing the defence a little bit. You know, Joel Matip, his injury history. And Joe Gomez as well will be chomping at the bit, won't he? To reclaim his spot alongside van Dijk. So wouldn't shock me to see either one of those three. Obviously, van Dijk's just the stalwart that'll be there throughout the season, you'd imagine. And yeah, I think it would be a good game for Konate as well, just, you know, on the back of the United game. Brighton was a tough game. Another good test for him, you know, just to get that under his belt. What a test it is to come up against Luis Suarez and co.
Bring it on. We love a bit of Liverpool, Atletico. Thanks as always to James and Kiva. Check out Kiva's piece on the Brighton game at the weekend. Of course, the midfield dilemma that faces Jurgen Klopp at the moment. That was the Red Agenda. Thanks for listening. And we'll do another one after the Atletico game. See you then.